everyone. Today's daf is daf Samach Aleph in Avodah Zarah, final daf of the fourth parak of Avodah Zarah. In this daf, we're going to be concluding our discussion about Yayin Nesach, although when we start the fifth parak tomorrow, God willing, we will see that there is going to be continuation of the discussion regarding Yayin Nesach, but in terms of Negiah, in terms of contact of wine, so the Gemara over here has one final discussion about Negiah, about contact of wine. When we finish today's daf, which I got the message, we need to finish today's daf. When we finish today's daf, we will hopefully take a look at Rashi at the very end of the perek. If you turn the page, you'll see Rashi in the very bottom of the perek. So Rashi there gives us an overview, a summary of all the Gemaras that we did for the past seven blocks. The whole discussion of Negiah starts on Daf Nun Hey. On Daf Nun Hey, we talked about we started the discussion of contact of wine by a non-Jew, and then Nun Hey through Samach Aleph, right, seven blot of Gemara. So the Gemara has now given us a lot of anecdotes and a lot of different storylines in terms of when is it Aser, when is it Mutter, and even when is it Aser, when is it Aser B'Shtiyah, and when is it only. When's it Aser B'Shtiyah Uvehana, when it's only Aser B'Shtiyah. So there's a lot of different parameters, and the Gemara never gives us a summary, so Rashi's going to give us a summary statement. So at the end of today's daf, hopefully we'll leave us enough time so that we'll be able to get through Rashi's summary statements of all these Gemaras. Good. Okay. The Mishnah starts off, Amitai Yenosho V'Kochavim. Someone who purifies the wine of a non-Jew, what does that mean? Look at the first Rashi in the Mishnah. So here's the story. So it's a business operation where the Jew says to the non-Jew, look, it's your field, it's your land, it's your grapes, it's your everything. I want to make wine. I want to run a cycle of kosher wine. So I'll do everything, meaning you sit there. Don't get up, don't move, don't help me, don't do anything. You sit there. I'll do everything. And the non-Jew is ready to accept not payment right now, but later. Meaning that the Jews are going to end up selling the wine, and later on, the business venture doesn't demand the capital be up front, but now you can pay me when in fact you yourself get paid. Good.
Isn't this how we get all the kosher wine from?
Correct.
This is how they do it.
Yeah.
Correct.
This is how they do it.
So here, our Mishnah is going to be focusing on one aspect of the production, and that is storage. Right? Meaning, we're going to keep the wine right now, and if you keep it in a certain place under certain circumstances, are we concerned that the non-Jew is going to go ahead and touch it? So the Mishnah here deals. And you put it in his rishus, the rishus of the non-Jew. Ha-pesuach l'rishus harabim. Okay. Right, the non-Jews' property, and it's open up to Rishus Arabim, be'ir sheyesh ba'ov dekocham v'Yisraelim, says the Mishnah. If the town is open up to both Jew and non-Jew, mutter. So then that's okay, that's acceptable. Be'ir shekula ov dekochavim aser. However, if the Jew is made up all, I'm sorry. If the city, if the town is made up all of non-Jews, so then it would be aser, achi yeshiva meshamer. So there you need a shomer, you need a guardian, someone to watch the wine and to make sure that no non-Jew is going to touch the wine. Shomer says the Mishnah, ain't a shomer tzarech liyos yoshiva meshamer, afapishu hu yotze v'nichnas mutter. So the Mishnah says you don't need constant supervision, what we would call in our modern terminology a mashkiach tmidi. You don't need that. Yotze v'nechnas, someone who comes and goes. In other words, yotze v'nechnas is equal to mirsus. Right? The idea of mirsus is that you have to give them something to worry about. So as long as you're a yotze v'nechnas, as long as you're coming and going in and out at variable times,
you now provide mirsus, you provide fear and concern. The non-Jew is not going to touch it, knowing that at any given point in time, and the Jew will walk in. And so therefore the Mishnah says that's acceptable. Rav Shimon ben Lazar, Rav Shimon ben Kochav, Machasi, and Rav Shimon ben Lazar makes a very cryptic statement. He says that all the domains of the non-Jew are one domain. What does he mean by that? First of all, what does he even mean by that? Second of all, is he being Machmir? Is he being Mako? Okay, so wait for the Gemara. The Gemara is going to have that discussion about what Rav Shimon ben Lazar is saying. Okay, number two. Okay. Again, production of wine on a non-Jew's property, it really, all of it belongs to the non-Jew. The grapes, the wine belongs to the non-Jew. Again, it's the same business venture. It almost sounds like the identical same case, right? And it may be. I'll get back to that in just a moment. So, and again, you leave the wine on the property, on the premises of the non-Jew, and now the question comes up, how do I know that the non-Jew is not going to touch any of the wine? The holocaust of Lohis Kabalti Mimcha Ma'os. And he writes to you a receipt, and he says, paid. Okay? Why would he do that? You didn't pay him yet. Right? Rashi says it straight out. Okay. If he writes you a receipt that says paid, motor, so then it's going to be permissible. Aval im yirtzi yisro lahotzi ve'ena manicho ad sheyiten lo es ma'usav. However, if the non-Jew has not written you a receipt yet, and essentially it belongs to the non-Jew, and essentially... when and only when you sell it, do you then give the money over to the non-Jew? That was a story that happened up in Beishan. The Asur, and they said that is Asur. Okay, now, the Mishnah here is a little bit strange because the Mishnah gave us two seemingly separate qualifications. Meaning, the Mishnah is dealing with basically one case. I want to go to a non-Jew who has a vineyard and he's got a lot of grapes, and I want to go there and I want to manufacture wine. The concern, of course, is that if he goes there and he touches the actual wine, he's going to make it into Yain Nesach. Fine. So what the Mishnah is basically saying is that you can do it. You can go there. You can make the wine, and you can even store it on his property, but there has to be certain parameters, certain conditions that are met in order to ensure that he doesn't touch it. Okay. Now, the Mishnah seems to be giving us... It's funny. The Mishnah is talking about one case or talking about two cases. The Mishnah is giving us two different parameters. The first parameter in the Mishnah is... you have to have Jews in town. If it's open up to Rosh Hashanah, to a public domain, there's got to be Jews in town. Okay. And if there are no Jews in town, so then you got to set up a Mashkiach. Not a Mashkiach Tamidi, but a Mashkiach Yosef Nechnas. Good. And then the Mishnah says, also it depends on whether or not he writes you a receipt. Meaning that if he writes you a receipt of paid, meaning that that's your wine, he's not going to touch your wine. That's your wine. Right? If he didn't write you a receipt, so essentially it's his wine, and it only is going to become yours when you actually front him the money. Fine. That's the Mishnah. Mishnah over here, are these two qualifications working hand in hand with one another, or are they two separate qualifications? So here, let's now take a look at Rashi. Rashi in the Mishnah. Second Rashi in the Mishnah with the word mutter. Mutter says Rashi. Now this is Rashi talking about the first qualification of the Mishnah, when there are both Jews and non-Jews in the town. Mutter. Rashi demir sosleo v'kochavim v'lo naga. De amar. What's going to happen? The non-Jew is going to be worried because Jews are walking through the town, and he's going to say to himself, Dilma chazi li hanach Yisrael de avrei b'risho sarabim. What's going to happen is the Jew's going to come by, see me touching the barrel of the wine of the Jew, the manufacturer of the wine, the producer of the wine, and I'm not going to get paid and forget it. The afilu ein mafteach v'chosem shari, even without lock and key, says Rashi, that would be permissible. V'hu, and then. Watch carefully. Rashi writes, "V'hu she'in lo klum aloso yain kigon shikasav lo his kabalti mimcha." And says Rashi, we're talking about a situation where the non-Jew already wrote a receipt to the Jew saying his kabalti, I already got paid. Okay? Akidamin lakamen beidach bava, as it says in the later part of the Mishnah. Good. Comes out from Rashi that the Mishnah is not two cases, the Mishnah is one case. These two points go hand in hand. So according to Rashi, the way Rashi lays out the Mishnah, two things need to happen in order to ensure that there's no contact between the non-Jew and the wine that is entrusted in his house. Number one, says Rashi, there has to be set up in a public area. There has to be a public viewing of the wine. It has to be connected to the Rishus HaRabim, open to the Rishus HaRabim. And there has to be, this is all still part of one, and there has to be Jews walking through the town so that at any given point in time, a Jew could turn over to the side and say, oh wow, look at that. And he watches and he sees the wine, and he'll see if in fact the owner of the property, and really the owner of the wine, right, up until this point in time, is going to touch it. Good. And says Rashi, right, and the conjunction over here, the correct conjunction is and. And you also needed that the non-Jew wrote to the Jew his kabalti, which means basically this wine is yours. Right? I got paid already. His kabalti, I already got paid already, this wine belongs to you, and so therefore, by right, I have no right to touch it. Okay? That is the way the Mishnah operates according to Rashi, so you have two parameters. It is interesting because Rashi also writes, we're talking about a case where there's no lock and key. If the wine is not under lock and key, like we discussed in yesterday's daf. Okay. Not for now, but go through Tosfos, we're not going to do this now. And Tosfos has a lengthy dismantling of Rashi. Rabbeinu Tam offers a different pshat, and Rabbeinu Tam segregates the Mishnah into parts A and to part B. If you look back at the Mishnah, you know, the difficulty in Rashi, the simple difficulty within Rashi is that the Mishnah does present it as two separate cases. I mean, really, that's...
Well, when you repeat the case,
correct. Correct.
Add to it.
Absolutely correct. All right? That's what makes Rashi difficult, and that's why when you go through Tosfos over here, you will see Tosfos, that question together with a whole bunch of other questions, right, dismantles Rashi. Okay. We start with the Gemara, and the Gemara says, wait a second. Even if the city is made up of all non-Jews, it's a non-Jewish city, but don't you have the Rochlim, don't you have the peddlers who are walking through the city? Who are these peddlers? Look at Rashi. Interesting. Rashi says, "Mochrim b'samim v'Yisraelim hein over me'ir le'ir." They're selling b'samim. They're selling fragrances and spices. Jews are in the fragrance business. Jews are in the spice business. Yeah. If you look at the bottom toaster, second to last toaster on the page, Vaika Rochlin, there are these peddlers. The Afa Gav. Now look at toaster. Immediately jumps to Takanas Ezra. One of Ezra's institutions, Lo Haisa Ella Shiyavru Beare Benos Yisrael Shelo Yizganu Abalehem Lefi Darkam Ayovrim Sham. Yeah, Jews were in the fragrance business. One of Takanas Ezra. Ezra made a lot of Takanas. Where does the Gemara list them all together? Baba Kama. Right. Thank you. So if you look over there, the common denominator of all the Takanas of Ezra were basically, we need to make more Jewish children. Right? One of his Takanas of Ezra was to eat garlic on Friday night, because garlic was viewed as an aphrodisiac. And you look over there in the Gemara, and the Gemara over there lists a number of Takanas that were made, basically because, again, you go back to that point, historically, a small segment of the Jewish population left Bava, went back into Eretz Yisrael, talking 40,000 Jews going back to Eretz Yisrael. So Ezra said, we need to make more Jews. So part of the Takanas of Ezra, the main purpose of Takanas Ezra was to populate. And so, after Takanas Ezra, Jews got into the fragrance business, and Jews were selling fragrance. Yes, that's what they did. And what bothers Tosos now is, we're talking about a non-Jewish town. What are the fragrance dealers doing in a non-Jewish town? The whole point of Takanas Ezra was to go around and sell it to Jews, not right, to populate Jews. So that's what Tosfos is saying over here. Look, you're right. Primarily, they're selling to Jews, but they're in the fragrance business, and you know what I mean. They got to make a living, so they're going through other towns. That's That's the Rochlin. That's the spice peddlers. So anyway, so back to the Gemara. So in our Mishnah is talking about a scenario where there's a city made up of all non-Jews. Okay, it happens. So the Gemara says, but even if that does happen, but aren't there the Rochlin Hamachzirin Bayaros Amar Shmuel Beirsh Yeshlo Dasayim Uvriach, gated communities? Okay, we're in South Florida. We speak gated communities, right? You can only go into a certain community, right? Only if you go up to the front and either you're a member or you show some sort of identification. And right, Ein Chadash. There's nothing new. So the Gemara over here describes, Shmuel describes a town where there's Dalsayim Uvriach, where there's gates. And the gates are bolted and locked. And the only way a Jew would come into town is only if he got clearance. And once he got clearance, so now we know there's a Jew in town. So the Gemara is saying that's what we're describing. That's the type of town we're describing, that it is all non-Jews. Okay, Amar Rav Yosef. So again, now we go back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says you can manufacture the wine of a non-Jew, meaning harvest his grapes, press it, make the wine, even leave it on his premises. According to Rashi, you need two things. You need it to be in a Rishus HaRabim, and you need his Kabbalti. And also you need a receipt to be written, basically, where the non-Jew is signing off. This wine belongs to you, it does not belong to me. Amar Rav Yosef, v'chalon k'Rishus HaRabim dami. Okay? What is considered Rishus HaRabim? Now, the simple pshat of Rishus HaRabim are the barrels of wine are actually next to the public domain. What if they're visible through somebody's window? Right? Rashi. V'chalon k'Rishus HaRabim dami. Afilu beis pasuch l'chatzir, v'chalon pasuch l'chatzir. Rishus Rabim keneged Pesach Habayis keman de pasuch l'Rishus Rabim dami. As long as somebody can see it from the window, that's considered in this regard Rishus Rabim. Ashpa k'Rishus Rabim dami. A trash heap is like a Rishus Rabim, meaning that there, back then they used to have just simple trash heaps in the somewhere in town. And if the wines were deposited next to the trash heap, so that people go there, people dump their trash off all the time, that's also considered Rishus HaRabim. V'dik like a Rishus HaRabim. And the palm tree is also like a Rishus HaRabim as well. Meaning that if you climb the palm tree and you can see the barrels from the higher elevation view that you're at right now, that's also considered like Rishus HaRabim. We find this all the time. Many times in Halacha, we use the word Rishus HaRabim and we're not using the same exact terminology. In Shabbos, Rishus HaRabim means one thing. In Tumah Tahara, Rishus HaRabim means another thing. Mm-hmm. Here, in terms of supervision of the wine, to make sure that the non-Jew doesn't touch the wine, Rishus HaRabim has a much looser definition. It's not the same definition that we talk about regarding Shabbos, regarding Tumah Tahara, Safik Tumah, but Rishus HaRabim. Right, it's a different Rishus HaRabim. So the Rishus HaRabim is a term in the Gemara that has different meanings depending on the context of where it's being discussed. One of the things we discussed in terms of what qualifies the Rishus HaRabim is palm tree view. If you climb the palm tree and you can see the barrels from where you are on the palm tree, that's considered Rishus HaRabim. Psik Reshe. Right. I got so lost over here because I'm thinking Psik Reshe means like on Shabbos, you know, when it's a chicken head, Psik Reshe. Right, the Gemara does not mean that over here. Psik Reshe over here means top of the tree was cut off. And so now there are no dates on the top of the palm tree. So why would you be climbing a palm tree if there are no dates on top? So is the beheaded palm tree considered a Rishus HaRabim? Pligi ba Rav Acha v'Ravina Charas v'Chad Shari. So the Gemara brings down differing positions. One says that it's also, one says it's Mutar. Manda also Lamale Disolik Hasam. So the Gemara gives very simple svaros. The one who says it's also, why would you be climbing a palm tree if there's no dates on top? So therefore, it doesn't qualify. That palm tree doesn't qualify as a Rishus HaRabim. Umanda Shari Zimne Da Abdalei Behema V'Sak Liyuna Basra. And the one that says the Mutter says, no, sometimes there's a point to climbing the palm tree. Let's think about it for a moment, a case where you lost your little animal, and you're looking all over for your little animal, and I don't know where it is. And so what you need is an aerial view. So you climb up the palm tree, and you look around, even though there's no dates on the palm tree, but you climb up the palm tree to look for your animal, and shine, and that's why that would be an occurrence of why you would be climbing up the palm tree. And I guess, look, I mean, essentially what they're arguing about is what is considered enough mirsus, what's considered enough fear and concern for the non-Jew to inhibit the non-Jew from touching the wine. Right? So is the non-Jew going to entertain the idea, look, he's not climbing that palm tree. I got nothing to worry about. Or no, even if it's going to be on a rare occasion that he's going to climb the palm tree, that provides enough mirsus for the non-Jew so that he won't touch the wine. Four lines from the bottom. The Amutan Rabbanan. Echad olkech ve'echad asor chabayis bechatzer shol avikochavim umilu yayin v'yisrael dar ba'oso chatzer mutter. Af api she'ein mavtech v'chosam b'yado. Tosefta says, you buy wine, you have you rent out space in the property of Novi Kochavim, you fill it up with wine. If there's a Jew living in the chatzir, good. That Jew would provide mirsus, he would provide a certain fear to the non-Jew. The non-Jew will not touch the wine, even if there's not maftech v'chosam, even if there's naki, even if there's nasil, that is fine. Bechatzir acheres mutter. If a Jew lives in the next chatzir over, not in this chatzir, but the next chatzir over, so that would be okay. But only if maftech v'chosam b'yado, that's only he needs a lock and key there, and a seal. If you don't have a lock, key, and seal, so then there's no guarantee that the non-Jew touched the wine. This is obviously talking about where the wine is not facing the Rishas HaRabim, and so therefore there is nothing to inhibit the Jew from touching the wine, and so there the wine has to be under lock and seal. Hamitar yenesh avikochavim b'rishuso v'yisrael dar ba'oso chatzer mutter v'hu she maftech v'chosam b'yado. Again, we go back to our Mishnah's scenario. You're the manufacturer of the wine. It's his grapes, it's his property, it's his everything. His meaning the non-Jew. And you're the manufacturer of the wine. The Mishnah says that if there is a Jew living in the chatzir, that would be okay. Then the Braisa says, but it has to be under lock and seal. So the Gemara says, wait a second. Amalei Rabbi Yochanan Latana. So Rabbi Yochanan says to the Tana. Tana over here meaning the guy who is reciting the Braisa. Right? That's a, when the Gemara talks about a Tana, it means someone who memorized and is now reviewing the Braisos. So he says to the Tana, Tani, Apapisha Maftech Lechosam Yado. Mutter. And Rav Yochanan says to the Tana, no, incorrect. Meaning, go back, rewind, and what we're going to erase. And no, if a Jew lives in the Chatzer, even though it's not under lock and seal, it's going to be acceptable, it'll be good. Fine. Bechatzer acheres, what if the wine is in another Chatzer? Aser. So then it's going to be also Alpha Pisha Maftech Vechosam B'yado Divra Meir. Even if it's under lock and seal, says Rav Meir, I'm worried, I'm concerned. Vechachamim Osrim Achi Shema Yoshev V'meshamer O Achi Avo Memuna Habal Likitzim. And the Chachamim say it's going to be Osir until you have a Shomer. Or you have someone appointed who comes at designated times. Okay. The Gemara later, in just a little bit from now, is going to say, what do you mean comes at designated times? If he comes at designated times, that's right, that's terrible. You don't want him to come at designated times, you want him to come at variable times. Yeah.
Isn't this one in the previous price?
Right. So the Gemara seeks clarity over here. Chachamim Ahaya. So the Gemara says, look, this position of the Chachamim, meaning we could say Rameir argues, that's fine. But where's the Chachamim at? Ilema Seifa. So the Gemara says, what is he? Is the Chachamim talking about the Seifa? Tanakam and Nami Meister. Ka'aser. It doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't work out. Because the second part of the Braisa, this Tosefta, is talking about wine of a non-Jew that you made bitahara. You made in a state of purity, meaning you handled everything. You made the wine. And then you left it on his premises. So Rav Meir says, it's Aser. Right, if it's left in somebody else's chatzer, it's aser, and the chachamim say it's aser. There's no machlokas then; it doesn't make any sense. So ve'ela aresha de seifa. So the Gemara says, okay, so it must be going on the first half of the second segment, meaning the case where it's again, it's the non-Jew's wine, but you manufactured it and you left it in his chatzir, the chatzir of the non-Jew. So, but the Gemara says, wait a second. Also, it doesn't make any sense, because when the Braisa was set over in front of Rav Yochanan, hearing the Braisa, said, no. If a Jew lives in that chatzir, good. The wine is good. The non-Jew will not touch it, knowing that there's a Jew living right in the chatzir. So that's fine. Ella, I say for the ratio. So we're going to go back to the first segment of the Tosefta, where there the Tosefta was talking about wine manufactured and owned by a Jew left on the premises of a non-Jew. The Ka'amar Tanakama Bechatzar Acheres Mutter Vehu Shemavtech Vechosam Yadom. So according to the Tanakama, if you leave it in someone else's chatzar, it's okay, as long as it's under lock and seal. The Chachamim Omrim La'olam Aser Ashi Yishamer Yoshev V'Meshamer O Ashi Yavom Amunah Balakitzim. Okay? And that's it. In other words, so the Bryce is a little bit disorganized, meaning that last position of the Chachamim is not going on the discussion of the non-Jewish wine, meaning the wine of a non-Jew that was manufactured by a Jew. It's not talking about that. It's going back to the first part of the Braisa. First part of the Braisa is talking about where the wine is actually Jewish wine. Wine owned and made by a Jew and just left and deposited in the chatzar of a non-Jew. That's what the last statement of the Braisa is going on. And it comes out now that here's the machlokas. According to the Tanakama, so as long as it's under lock and seal, we're good. And according to the Chachamim, no, that's not good enough. You need a mashgiach. You need a person who comes. And now the Gemara is going to qualify. The Braisa says he comes at designated times, and the Gemara says that doesn't make any sense. Mamuna balakitzim griusahu. That's bad. If he's coming at designated times, Ella. So the Gemara says, fine, you're right. Correct, we're just going to make a simple adjustment over here. Ashi Yavam Amunah She'eino Balakitzin. Okay, that, fine. Correction. He comes at non-designated time. Okay, good.
What was Rabbi Meir's opinion? Even if there's a chosam in the teach, it's no good?
Yeah. He's...
Well, chosam means like a seal.
It's sealed. Sealed. So he could... Because he could forge. In other words, Rabbi Meir... This is, I would suggest that this is Rameh L'Shitaso, the Rameh's Choshes L'Miyuta. He's worried about things that normally we wouldn't worry about. And so what he would worry about is that he would undo the lock, he would undo the seal, do his little nisuch, and then redo both.
But according to Rabbi Meir, you could never buy wine in a supermarket.
It's right. Rameh's position is right.
Even
right.
Sealed.
Agreed. Agree. We don't. I mean, yeah. Okay. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Amar Rishus Abdi Kocham Achasi. You go back to the Mishnah, and there's a cryptic statement of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar where he says all non-Jewish properties are one. What does that mean? Two questions, really. What does it mean? And after we've determined what it means, is he coming to present himself as a chumras or as a kula? So again, look back at the Mishnah. The Mishnah is discussing wine that is non-Jewish wine, meaning the grapes, the vineyard, it all belongs to the non-Jew. You went in there as a business venture, you went to manufacture the wine, and you, after making the wine, you left it there on his premises, on his properties. And the Mishnah taught us that you need a mashgiach. You need somebody who is Yotzei V'Nechnas to make sure that the non-Jew never touches the wine. Then in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, all properties are one property. So, the Gemara now addresses some basic questions. Ibailu, Reb Shimon Elazar Lahakal Achmir. What's he doing? What's his move over there? Is he being Mekel? Is he being Machmir? Reb Yehuda Amazir Lahakel. Reb Nachman Amazir Lahakmir. So the Gemara says, Machlokas. Reb Yehuda Amazirir Lahakel. The Hachikamar. Tanakama. Kishim Shibirushuso Aser. Kach Birushuso Vikochavim. Acher. Nami Aser. V'chayshinan legomlin. The old question of reciprocity, right? I scratch your back, you scratch mine, right? So, look, it goes like this. Right? It could very well be that according to the Tanakhama, it doesn't matter where the barrels are deposited, in his property or on someone else's property. Meaning, look, if it's on his property, look, I'm so happy that the Jew made the wine. It's nice. But you know what? I'm going to help myself to it. Look, it's mine anyway until he buys it off of me. So I'm going to help myself to it. So, and what if he deposited by someone else's property? So if we're worried about Gomlin, about reciprocity, it's also a concern. Because even though the wine doesn't belong to him, the other landowner, but okay, you know what? I'll take from now. He'll owe me one. It'll be fine, right? Chayshin legomlin. And then Reb Shimon Lazar Omer Bamed Ramamor and Bershusa Vikochamacher Mutter Velo Chayshin legomlin. And then a Kolon comes Reb Shimon Lazar and he says, no, we're not worried about reciprocity. How do you read that in the Mishnah? What you're going to have to do is read it as a question, right? In other words, Rav Shimon ben Lazar Omer, Rav Shus Ovdi Kochavim Achasi, right? You read it as a question. We don't view all the non-Jews as one single entity. They're not. They don't do this reciprocity thing. But that's how you have to read Rav Shimon ben Lazar, according to this first version. And Rav Nachman Amazira Lahachmir V'Achikamer. And now the second pshat that we're going to offer, it's the same basic pshat. It's just that we're going to reverse the shitas. And Rav Shimon ben Lazar is not asking a question; he's making a statement. Tanakama b'medvar mamorim v'rishus of v'rishus of v'kochav nachem mutter v'lo chayshin legomlin. If it's deposited by another non-Jew, so then we are not worried, and we're not worried about reciprocity. And Rav Shimon ben Lazar Omer kol v'rishus of v'kochav achasi. Period. Statement: we are worried about reciprocity. Tanya kavasi de Rav Nachman Amar Ziri. Here, Rav Shimon Lazar makes it as a statement. He is worried about reciprocity. Good.
So, okay. How does this work, the whole thing with the wine? Should we be storing it there?
According to Rav Shimon Lazar, you can't store it neither on his property nor on someone else's property. Okay, because we're always worried about reciprocity. Okay, a little bit more before we finish the perek. Okay, good. Debay parzak rufila usuvicham regabe arisaihu. Okay, in the house of parzak, parzak's the name of the man. Rufila says Rashi sheni lamelech. Okay, he was an important guy, big man. He's a prominent man. So he left wine by his arisaihu, by his sharecroppers. Okay. You know when you're worried about reciprocity? When there is an opportunity for you to scratch my back and for me to scratch your back. Meaning, if we're basically on even footing with one another. Right now, right, so you'll allow a Jew to deposit wine on my property. And you know what? If I come and I take a little bit and I help myself a little bit, I know that when the time comes and a Jew deposits wine on your property, you would do the same for me. So that's when we're worried about Gomlin. That's when we're worried about reciprocity. But Parzak and his sharecroppers, we're not worried about reciprocity over there. Because, look, his sharecroppers are not on equal footing. They're sharecroppers. They work his land. They get a percentage of the yield of the produce. But they're not really... They're not on equal footing with one another. So the first argument made by the rabbis, right, the anonymous rabbis, is that under such circumstances, we're not worried about reciprocity. In other words, the Gemara is not taking a stand on whether we do or we're not worried about reciprocity. The Gemara is just simply arguing. Even if you subscribe to the view of reciprocity, but not here, because there are reason, there are sharecroppers, there is not going to be reciprocity because they're not going to be in that position. They're not landowners. They're not going to be in the position where, you know what, you did it for me, I'll do it for you. Okay.
On the other hand, they are in a business venture with the guy.
So, Amalu Rava Adarabba. afilu l'man d'amr lo cheshin l'golem hani mila hechad lo mirsus minei aval hacha kevin the mirsus minei mechapi alei zechusa. Look, you're right. There is no reciprocity over here. But Rava says, I'll make an argument. I'll make a different argument altogether. Right? You're worried about the concern would be that he would touch it, and but other people would view it. The Gemara says, look, if they're sharecroppers, they're employees. So, right, working on a percentage, but they're really their employees. So if Parzik were to touch it, they wouldn't say anything because for fear of losing the job, they'll be mechapa, they'll cover it over, they won't say anything. So you can make an argument that no, that if it's left on Parzik's property, and even though there are other people over there, but they're just sharecroppers, they're not gonna say anything. Okay, fine. So who karcha dava yaseh bechamer d'Yisrael ishtakecho v'kacham dava kai benedane. There was a big town, there was a big city, a krach. There were barrels of Jewish wine in the city. And then, lo and behold, in between the barrels of wine, they found a non-Jew. Amar Rava, im nitbas alav keganav, chamra shareh, v'ilo asre. So Rava says it really depends on the laws of the town. If the laws of the town are such, where if he was caught with his hand in the cookie jar, or in this case, in the barrel of wine, so then Rava says, so that's Mirsa said, and he's concerned, and he's going to be afraid, and so therefore, according to Rava, the wine will be acceptable, that will be fine. However, if caught, he won't be prosecuted, and there won't be any repercussions. So then you have to be concerned that he put his hand in the wine, and consequently the wine is going to be usur, and that is the ruling, the uncontested ruling of Rava. Hajolach Rabbi Shmuel, that is the end of the fourth parak. Okay.
This is an interesting support for that
Ramosha
about the Stam. Really talks about if the government has rules, and it's talking about super.
Correct. Okay. Is able to not take away the Yisr, but to make sure that they don't then prevent them from touching it. Okay. Maskana de Milsa. Okay, Rashi realizes that we just went through seven blad of Gemara of just all over the place, right? Stories and anecdotes and rulings and right? It's just difficult. It's a difficult seven pages of Gemara because although the truth of the matter is getting through the Gemaras weren't that hard, but organizing the Gemaras, that's difficult. So Rashi does uncharacteristically is he spends a short couple of lines saying, you know what? Let's take a moment to organize. So it's a worthwhile venture. We have time left today. Let's do this. Let's go through this Rashi over here where Rashi organizes the last seven pages of Gemara. Maskana de Milsa. Rashi writes, here we go. Let's go over some conclusions now. Okay, so we can walk away from today thinking maybe we understand a couple of things. Manga ove kochavim. A non-Jew touches the wine. Kevishin is kavin liga, shich shechaf apishlo nisech, aser. With intent to touch the wine, even if he didn't do nisuch, meaning... Right, the nisach is almost incidental. But in other words, he fully intended to touch the wine... It's going to be aser afilu b'hana, even to benefit from the wine. And me masnisin de agardem in ove kochavim mishum lech lechamer nazira. Okay, and Rashi says, in other words, and Rashi is great. Rashi really expects us to know. I'm just going to name the case for you, and then your job is, of course, to remember where we had that in the last seven pages. So good if you've been reviewing the Gemaras, like I haven't. But if you've been reviewing the Gemaras, you will know the case of agardem. A case of agardem, if you remember, is where he put his hand into the barrel, right? But again, with the intent to touch it, that is asur b'hana. Okay, that's number one. Number two, shelo b'kavana. Incidental contact. So in other words, he touched the wine, but he wasn't really focused on touching the wine. Kigon, lohikar boshu yayin. Let's say, for example, number one, Rashi says, he didn't know it was wine. Right? He put his hand in thinking it was something else. Mutar bahana. Then, you can't drink it, but you can get benefit from it. Meaning, if you have to, you sell it. If you want to, I should say, you sell it. And how do I know that? Because we go back to our Meshuggah. Right, you remember back a couple days ago, we talked about the crazy guy who put his hand, right, put his hand in the wine. He didn't know it was wine. I don't know what he knew to begin with in general. So also yesterday we had a case where the non-Jew fell into the pit. So that was incidental contact. He touched the wine, but he had no intention to touch the wine. That's what we're going to call incidental contact. So v'chein, another example, says Rashi, of this category is lito davar acher kagon esrog de Rav Ashi. Right. Remember, the esrog fell into the wine, and the non-Jew got so right. Oh my gosh, the esrog! Right. And he goes into the wine, and he puts his hand into the wine to get the esrog. That's also incidental contact, meaning he had no intent to put his hand in the wine. So he made contact, but that's incidental contact. You know, in the NFL, you don't get penalized for incidental contact. So, terrible analogy, but fine. So over here, it's mutter bahana. It's right. You're allowed to get benefit from it. But remember, contact by a non-Jew will always make the wine asur b'shtia. The difference between category one and two over here is incidental versus non-incidental, intentional versus incidental. And the definition of intentional means he knows it's wine, he knows he's putting his hand in the wine for whatever reason, meaning it doesn't have to be necessarily for nisuch. That's bekavana. That's where the wine is asur b'shtia v'hana. Incidental, like all the examples that we just discussed, So then it's asur b'shtia, it's mutter v'hana.
The one that put his finger in to prevent the leaking.
Right, that was yesterday.
Yeah.
Right, so that is, which one's that going to be? That's incidental.
That's unintentional.
That's incidental, right? Shlo b'kavanu u'mutter v'hana.
So I can sell it?
I thought that you were making a distinction about Sheikh as opposed to just sticking in.
No,
she's ignoring that.
Right.
It depends on the intention.
Correct. No, because even the Esrog case, had he eaten. They grabbed his hand in order so that he wouldn't do Sheikh Sheikh. Meaning, but for that first entrance of his hand into the wine, he was focused only on getting the Esrog. So that's what I mean. I'm using the terminology incidental. Right. Right.
So Sheikh Sheikh is not.
Sheikh Sheikh is not. It's not a king component. It's ability to do Sheikh Sheikh. Okay. Manga over kochavim ayde acher. Okay, this is category number three. Category number one was contact intentional. Let me say it better. Okay? Intentional contact. Category number two is unintentional contact, incidental contact. Category number three is where he touches the mago v'kocham ayde davar acher. This third category is controversial. Meaning, if you remember, when we did the Gemaras, I pointed out that Rashi says he touched the wine with the lulav, but I also pointed out back then that many Rishonim disagree with Rashi. And many Rishonim disagree with the girs of the Gemara that Rashi had.
Ayde davar acher, good going. If you hadn't had the guy with the pouch of the wine, if it wasn't full,
right. If he touches it with davar acher, if he touches it with another object, so it depends whether or not it was an intentional or an incidental contact. And according to Rashi, if it was intentional, you're not allowed to drink it. And again, as I pointed out, controversial position on the part of Rashi. Kocho. Now we move on to yesterday's daf. Kocho shel oved kochavim b'chiburin. So over here, the fourth. So he doesn't actually make contact with the wine, but moves the wine with its force. So Rashi over here says it depends. Kigon du urik uruke hikar boshu yayin aser behana midrav Yochanan. If he pours the wine, so and he knows it's wine, so then it's aser. Not only aser, says Rashi, aser behana midrav Yochanan. The amr tseva hachreiz al yena mishum yainesach mishum lech lech lo mishum lech lech. Okay, so kocho, says Rashi, is aser behana. Lo hikir bo motor af b'shtiyah, And if he didn't know it was wine when he poured it, so then it's good. You're allowed to even drink it. Now, uvda de Rabbi Yochanan ben Arazav, Rabbi Yosef ben Urai, de chashari afil b'shtia, mishum da v'kochem lo hava yadav. Okay? Then, finally, shelo b'chiborn. What if it's koach, but not connected? Okay, what's an example of that? Kagon zrika. Right? You throw something into the wine. Mutter af pishtia. There, doesn't affect the wine at all. You're allowed to drink it. Afilu neskaved. And even if he intended to throw something into the wine, but that's koach, but not bechiburin, not connected. Medravashi damar kosha shebezav mutter, beover kochavim eino ose yainesach, kachi gia harav. Upsak halacha lamaisa. This is Higia Harav. I don't know who's talking over here. Right? This is the student of Rashi. Unclear. But that's the Psak halacha. That is the formal Psak halacha. Okay? So five categories. Category number one is intentional contact. Category number two is incidental contact. Category number three, Magal yidei adavar acher, touching it with another item. I told you that third one is controversial. Category number four is kochal b'chiburin, right? Force, but connected force, like pouring of the wine, which he says is asur b'hana. And category number five is koach shelo b'chiburin, right? Throwing something at the wine, and that Rashi says, even b'kavana does not affect the wine at all. Hadron alach, Rabbi Shmuel, that is the end of the fourth paragraph.